From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out about Encore Vocal Arts fall season and chat with their new artistic director.
I'll take a look at Dance Kaleidoscope's new piece, Remembrances.
And I'll meet Storytelling Arts' oldest emerging storyteller, and we'll have the arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Encore Vocal Arts is celebrating its 44th season with a new artistic director, an almost new executive director, and plenty of chances for audience participation. Sharon Gamble invited Encore's artistic director, John Perkins, and executive director, Tom McTamney, to chat.
So, John, before we talk about Encore Vocal Arts and the season, tell me what led you to vocal and choral conducting.
I had never done anything with choirs until I started as a freshman at Westminster Choir College in Princeton, New Jersey. In fact, my high school choir was just atrocious, and I didn't
did you sing
it.
In it?
No, I played piano.
Oh, okay.
And so I was sitting there in the bass section where I had been put based on my voice type, 10-second warm-up. And I heard this incredible sound from probably one of the nicest freshman choirs in the country, and I fell in love with choral singing right away.
Wow.
Yeah.
And had you not been in that place at that time, it might not have happened.
That's right. Composition theory, and then got me into Westminster Choir College. So, yeah.
What's the biggest challenge about choral conducting?
The balance of so many aspects of technical, human, and energetic, spiritual parts coming together at the same time.
Hmm. Are those all those elements you just mentioned, are those equal?
Depends on the day. Depends on what we're doing and what's needed in the moment and having the wherewithal to figure out what's needed in the moment.
Tom's looking at you like, I'm so glad I just have to do the business side. So I have the feeling that some of the elements you just mentioned came into play in planning the season. Now, you took over. Was any of the new season planned when you took over, or is this all your handiwork?
This was all a combination of speaking with the board and finding out what is Encore Vocal Arts, really beginning in April, having a little bit of a listening tour with different board members and singers, and then starting to figure out what is it that we can do. And the listening to the auditions, the choir singers have phenomenal voices, mm-hmm. And they're phenomenal people. And so the whole season sort of appeared as a question for me. This was always a personal question. What are we doing with our music? Here's this fantastic instrument of singers who are ready for almost anything. They've done so many different multi-sensory type of works in the last 15 years with the last two directors. So they're really ready for anything. And so what's my responsibility here?
So the singers have experience in a really broad range of kinds of music, pop to classical to religious,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Is there any, how egalitarian is this process? Do you talk to the singers and say, I'm thinking about Day of the Dead as sort of a hook or a theme or an organizing principle for a concert? What do you guys think? Do you have music that would fit, or do you come, is it more directed by you, the idea of the concerts?
In the ideal world, and we're talking about next year and the years forward, that will definitely be how we run things. And because the singers then have so much more buy-in, personal interest and involvement with the whole process. In the very short time in between signing a contract and having to develop a season, which was in about 5 or 6 weeks. I sort of had to just make the decisions and move forward. And it was more of an interaction with the board at that point.
Sure.
But a lot of listening in the beginning to find out, you know, what are the interests, what are the possibilities with the choir?
Yeah. And Tom, while you haven't been executive director all that long, you were good continuity connector for John, right?
Right. I actually started this position technically last summer, in summer of 2014. Originally, I had planned to retire from corporate life then, and things didn't work out as exactly as planned, and so I ended up continuing to work my old job all the way through the end of the year. But I spent 6 months in kind of the same listening that John's talking about, but listening on a broader scale of to the board, doing a lot of research, going out into the community. As you know, my background 20 years ago was as an arts administrator for almost a decade. And although not a lot has changed, a lot has changed in that period of time. And so it was good for me to get out and start talking to the funding community and to other arts administrators, kind of make my name known again in the environment. Mm-hmm. And then starting on January 1st, I took on the position as a part-time 20-hour a week, and it's my retirement job. So, yes, it's not been all that long. Greg Ristow, our former artistic director, did a great deal of the leading of the organization up until he finished his term in May. And I've been trying to work with John now for the last 5 or 6 months to transition him in as best I can with as much knowledge as I have.
Sure. What is the this might be two different questions, but what is the niche of Encore and what is its mission? And I ask that of each of you, because again, might be two different answers.
Well, the official mission statement is Encore Vocal Arts is building deep emotional connections to great choral music, uplifting and transforming the human spirit for multiple generations of singers and audiences. And my immediate question stepping into the group was how? Mm-hmm. How is this going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
From a very practical standpoint, and part of sort of the philosophy that I bring with this is that we've been doing so many multi-sensory and exploratory ways of presenting choral music. And now, in addition to that, I want us to be now connected with the Indianapolis community much more.
And I will also say that John has been a big part of actually developing that mission. That is a revised mission from previous years. We spent three multi-hour sessions 3 weeks in a row this summer with members of our board and John and me to look at our strategic plan, both short-term and long-term. And we knew, based upon what both John and I bring to the organization, that we felt a need to tweak the mission a bit, and we still feel that there's room to grow and to change. So so long as we continue to have strategic planning, we anticipate that the mission will evolve as we do.
Sure. For somebody who maybe hasn't been to an Encore concert yet, we might give an example of what is this multi-sensory thing they keep referring to. Want to give an example of a past?
You want to talk about Day of the Dead and what it's going to involve? Because that's a pretty good example.
Really looking forward to our first concert on November 1st, actually. Day of the Dead is, at its philosophical mission, a connection between the Latino and the non-Latino community in Indianapolis through this incredible, and now it's really turned into a Mexican-American tradition more than it is even an entire Mexican tradition. It's more celebrated in the South. We have partnerships with Ballet Folklorico Mosaicos, dancers, Mariachi Sol Jalisciense. The visuals of those groups are so much part of it. Altars on the stage, really bringing the tradition alive with a few very simple objects that that can represent the passion and the day that's to be celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying and have been trying to involve the audience as much as possible right. in all of our concerts so that they're not just coming and listening to us. And so this particular concert will have a reception an hour prior to the actual concert, as we often do. And in this one, we'll be having face painting, which is a part of the Day of the Dead tradition. And it's also, there will be other craft activities that mm-hmm. are part of that
sugar
tradition.
Skulls. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as well as a procession from the reception on to the concert portion that will include the audience as well.
And the dancers will be teaching us some Mexican dance steps before
wow.
the concert. And so there's a whole hour before the concert happens where all of this educational and engagement will happen with the audience and as well during the concert. So it's really exciting.
So bring your passive ears but your active mind, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Now you want singers, audience members to bring their voices to at least one of your Messiah concerts, right?
Yes, that's correct. So once again this year, and I don't remember how many years this has been, four or five now, we will be the main choral part of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra's Messiah Sing-Along. We will also partner with the Tabernacle Presbyterian Church Choir for a full concert version of the Messiah as well. And those happen on December 13th and 14th. The concert's on the 13th at Tabernacle Presbyterian. And on Monday the 14th will be at Indiana Landmarks, and that's the sing-along.
Cool. Fun. I was not aware that there are official anti-Valentine's attire colors until I read your materials. I love that the theme of your Valentine's weekend concert is He Loves Me, She Loves Me Not.
That's right.
So what kind of music can we expect?
We wanted to include everyone, no matter what day you're having on Valentine's Day. If you've just had a major breakup or if you're in between or totally in love. So we thought this would be a fantastic contrast. Brahms' Liebeslieder waltzes, it's already a tumultuous push and pull kind of do they love me, do they love me not? And we can look back at the Brahms and Clara Schumann thing that never happened in his personal life. But then we thought, well, what's the answer for everybody? And so we're commissioning a new work by Jay Kaworski, a composer out of Princeton, New Jersey, from Westminster Choir College. And this is going to be extremely entertaining, snarky, at times very humorous, at times deadly serious. So it's going to be a wonderful commission work.
I can see the nickname for the Valentine's concert is I'm going to that snarky concert.
And along with that, the tango dancers will be part of both pieces, tango being this kind of very push and pull art form. So that'll be sort of part of our multisensory aspect of the concert there.
Do you have fun when you conduct?
Tons of fun. It's the best part. When all the music is learned, when all the work has been done, we get to the concert and we can just do it and enjoy.
Is it ever hard to, you know, it's a little bit like being in live theater because you work on something, you finesse the details, and then the concerts come and then they're over and you will never have that moment again. Do you ever have trouble letting go?
That's a great question. I had the opportunity to conduct Carmina Burana at Butler University last year with the combined ensembles, and the physical tension finally got out of my body about 3 weeks later, but the music was going on in my head all summer long, and it does stay with you. It's kind of this ghost in your head that keeps singing, and quite wonderful.
Sharon Gamble with Encore Vocal Arts Artistic Director John Perkins and Executive Director Tom McTamney. Their first concert celebrates Dia de los Muertos on Sunday, November 1st at the Indiana State Museum. You can learn more about that concert and the whole season at encorevocalarts.org. Again, encorevocalarts.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Dance Kaleidoscope is opening their new season with the premiere of Remembrances, a ballet about the Holocaust. Travis DiNicola spoke with Remembrances choreographer and former DK dancer Brian Honigbaum about this challenging work. Joining them in the studio was DK's artistic director, David Hochoy.
David, Brian, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Thank you so much for having us, Travis.
Thanks for having us, Travis.
Absolutely. So glad to. And David, it's always exciting to see what DK is doing with their season, and this is an incredible piece to kick it off with this year. Brian, I want to start with you about how this piece came to be. You know, you used to dance with Dance Kaleidoscope, right?
I did. Mm-hmm. I don't want to date myself, but it was sometime in the
90s. Back in the last century.
Okay, fair enough. And since I've become a choreographer. But this is, to be fair, to create a ballet about the memory of the victims of the Holocaust seems to be an odd choice in some ways. And I'm curious how that came about and how you go about making that happen in a way that makes sense.
Well, when I started dancing, I was 9 years old at the Jordan Academy at Butler University, which ironically is the same studios that we're rehearsing in today. Mm-hmm. So it's very full circle for me. The secretary at the dance school had numbers on her arms. And being Jewish, I had a general idea of what that meant.
Yeah.
Her name was Agnes Vogel, and she and her husband, Michael Vogel, were both Holocaust survivors. And Michael was a well-known lecturer throughout Indiana and the country on the Holocaust. And you have to remember, this is in the 80s, before
sure.
Schindler's List, so it wasn't really as discussed as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
As I started to grow older, and as a dancer and a Jewish person, I really realized the importance of the Holocaust as far as making sure that we don't forget about it, that we continue to tell the story. And for me, it was a logical progression that the way I could tell the story was through my medium of dance.
Sure.
I believe that dance, as most art forms, can really express an emotion that can touch an audience. So it's, you read something in a book, it really doesn't have the same effect. When you can see the combination of dance and music and costume and lights, it really gives the audience a feeling.
So this is something that, I mean, obviously it's been important to you for a long time, but then at what was there a point where you said, you know, now I'm ready to create this piece, to create this dance?
It was really my dream since I was 13 years old.
Really? Yeah.
It's been a 25, 27-year dream of mine. And it took me until my mid-20s before I was really ready to get it out, that mm-hmm. I felt that I had enough knowledge and music and artistic vocabulary to be able to get it out. And I was lucky that I moved to Corpus Christi, Texas, and there's a small student pre-professional company there. And I mentioned it to the artistic director, and she gave me a wonderful opportunity to do it. And then it kind of sat.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of sat for a while. I had gotten it out, and it sat for a while. But really my dream from the time I was 13 was to do it here,
mm-hmm.
to give that to my community, to where I grew up, to my family, to the Jewish community, to Indianapolis, and to bring it home.
So it's been staged before, but this is the first time that DK is doing it, and the first time, obviously, here in Indianapolis.
Right. This is the first professional production of it, mm-hmm. the first time DK has performed it, and the first time it's being done in outside of Texas.
And you also, you had a National Endowment for the Arts grant to
we
help
do.
With this?
We did.
That's awesome.
We do.
So, David, when Brian came to you with this idea, what were your thoughts?
Well, when I was first approached about doing it, it didn't take me very long. The first thing I thought about was, yes, we definitely have to do it because the subject matter is very, very important, and I think it's a wonderful opportunity for me as an artistic director to program it on my season. So I said yes immediately, and then 2 years ago we went down to Corpus Christi because Brian did a revival of it down there, and then I was absolutely sure that I had made the right decision to bring it to Indianapolis because it's a very beautiful piece and it's very, very moving, and I think it's very important that we're doing it, and I think it's very important for people to come and see it because it will definitely change your perception about the Holocaust.
It may also change some people's perception about dance. And
it might.
I'm not saying that all dance has to be celebratory and joyful, but I'm very curious about this because about the process of creating this piece and how do you go about creating a dance piece that is respectful of the subject matter of the Holocaust and yet, you know, it isn't just such a complete downer, I guess, and not that saying that all dance, you know, can't deal with serious subjects. I mean, I think you said it well, that this is your medium and this is what you chose to use your artistic medium of dance to express this. But it, you know, I think it does raise a lot of interesting questions about the process.
And it's a great point. And I think that probably is the most difficult part of the process because you really want to find that line, and it's a very thin line in the choreography and the music and everything between abstract to where the audience doesn't really know what's going on and reality where you got people in SS uniforms marching around and it's a play. So finding that line between abstract and realism is the difficult part. And that's probably where it's the best experience I've had working with the Dance Kaleidoscope dancers and David because more than anyone I've ever worked with, they know where that line is and they can find it. So in a way, it makes my job a lot easier. What we do is we're telling the story of the Holocaust in two different ways.
Okay.
So we're telling it historically. So there's a big educational component to it. So there are representations through dance of actual events. There's a scene about Kristallnacht, which is referred to as the Night of Broken Glass, where the Nazis broke all the Jewish storefronts and burned the synagogues. There's a section about the Jewish ghettos, about the trains, about the gas chambers. So we show it to the audience historically so there's context. The second way that we do that is we have a family that you see throughout all of these events.
And you follow them throughout.
Right. Okay. The audience can really personalize with that family and almost put themselves in their shoes.
So there is some narrative to it in that way. I mean, sort of in following that family.
There is definitely narrative. The other thing that we do is we were very honored to get survivors' testimonies from Los Angeles Jewish community. And so interspersed throughout each section are actual survivors' testimonies.
Oh, that are recorded.
Basically
and
prefacing what's about to happen.
Okay. That was my next question. I was wondering if there was any narration or voiceover in addition to the dance piece. What sort of music are you using for this?
That was probably the hardest part. For me, I choreograph. I have to be inspired by music to choreograph. Mm-hmm. That's just my process. Everybody's a little different. So it probably took me about 10 or 15 years to collect enough music to make 45 minutes. And there's things from very obscure Eastern European ancient Jewish tunes to Shostakovich, to Leonard Bernstein, to music from Schindler's List that Universal was gracious enough to give us permission to use.
That's awesome. That's really great. David, what's it been like for your dancers working on this piece?
You know, I have to tell you that I'm very inspired by their work and Brian's choreography because I think one of the things that is very, very striking about our performance is how totally these young dancers give themselves to the project. I mean, you know, most of them are in their 20s, and this is something that happened a very long time ago and very apart from their consciousness, but they all listened very, very intently to what Brian was having to say about what was happening, and it's very moving how they give themselves to the project. You know, I wanted to answer your question also about finding the right balance, Brian,
yeah.
And that is, you know, art has the power to elevate. In so many cases, and I always go back to my friend Joseph Campbell, who wrote The Power of Myth, who said that we always need rituals in our lives because they help us to understand humanity. They help us understand tragedy. They help us to celebrate life. And in a strange way, what Brian has created is a ritual where the audience participates with the dancers on stage. And through the performance of remembrances, a clearer vision of what the Holocaust means to all of us comes through. And it's not, it's very, very sobering, but it's also very uplifting and enlightening.
From an educational standpoint, in addition to the public performances that you'll be doing on October 16th, 17th, and 18th, you're also performing this for school kids, right? Something like 8,000 of them are going to get a chance to see it, if I read that right?
That's right.
That's awesome.
We're doing 6 student matinees. So we do have the possibility of 8,000 students come and see us. And if anybody is interested, they should really contact the Dance Kaleidoscope office and tell them that your school is interested in coming to see it, because we still have room for students.
Brian, when you first started imagining this piece and then creating and working on it, were you thinking of it being performed for younger audiences?
That was really probably my first goal.
Yeah.
You find in today's society there's so much bad stuff out there. There's so much hate and intolerance that you almost become numb to it. And you read about it in the newspaper, and you see it on TV, and you become numb to it. The other reason for me was that as a Jewish person, someone that actually I teach Sunday school, I didn't feel that my students got it. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel that they understood the responsibility that as Jews they had, and as human beings, to make sure that these types of things didn't happen. And to me, in 2015, it's more important than ever. There's a lot of intolerance in today's mm-hmm. society. And so if the kids leave with something, some sort of emotion, it doesn't matter what it is, if they leave feeling angry or sad or upset or uncomfortable or disgusted, it's something. It's an emotion.
Or
that
wanting to learn more.
To cause them to ask questions.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you go to a serious movie and you get in your car in the parking lot and you sit there for a second before you turn the key on.
Mm-hmm.
You say, what did I just experience? That's really what we're trying to impart to the young people.
One other thing regarding younger students, you also have students from Indianapolis School of Ballet who are dancing in this. Tell me a little bit about that. David?
Well, Brian said that he needed some young people, and I immediately thought of my friend Victoria Liris, who is the chief cook and bottle washer over at the Indianapolis School of Ballet.
And for full disclosure, I am on the board of directors there at School of Ballet. So.
And I really do respect Victoria very much because, you know, she's a fantastic teacher, and
yes.
she demands so much of her students. And actually, a precedent has been set because last year, some of her students performed on a Dance Kaleidoscope, the program, actually on Carmina Burana.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a huge hit. So both Brian and I asked Victoria if she would be interested, and she said yes right away. And then Brian came up. And
that's a great experience for those young dancers, too.
Yeah, and it has been very interesting for them to work with Brian and working with the Dance Kaleidoscope people, and to feel the energy in the room is really quite incredible.
They're wonderful students. Very well-trained, very respectful, very professional. And, yeah, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for them to see the DK dancers and what happens during their day.
It's a great experience for everybody on that. I do want to mention also that that the Evening of Remembrances actually does start off with another piece. David, one of your pieces, Iconoglass, right?
His masterpiece.
Actually, and that's Brian specifically asked for Iconoglass. He was in the original cast of Iconoglass.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
And, yeah, he was. And It was.
Talk about things coming full circle, then.
Well, I'll tell you, when we were in the studio the other day, you know, I figured I was going to get emotional with my piece.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they ran Iconoglass, and I hadn't seen it since 19... and I was in the original. I got very emotional, and I couldn't figure out what it was, but it was complete full circle. And Iconoglass, to me, in my opinion, is just, I think, one of David's masterpieces. It really shows off everything about him and how powerful and amazing the company is. It'll blow you away.
And we have a particularly wonderful cast right now. Not that every cast isn't wonderful. You are wonderful too, Brian.
Oh, thank you.
But this cast is really, really fantastic, and they know how to do it. They
Excellent.
Know how to do it really well.
Well, and it's a great way to kick off the whole season.
Yeah.
Again, starting with Remembrances, and then later on we've got Classic Greats, Voices of a Generation, The Folk Rock Revolution, and Scheherazade 25. David, we'll have you back on, of course, to talk about those other performances as well. But gentlemen, thank you both for coming in and talking about Remembrances.
Thank you so much.
Travis DiNicola with Dance Kaleidoscope's Artistic Director David Hochoy and Choreographer Brian Honigbaum. DK starts their season with the Modern Ballet Remembrances on October 16th at Clues Memorial Hall at Butler University. Performances take place through the 18th, and you can get more information at holocaustballet.org, holocaustballet.org, or dancekal.org, dancekal.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I have the weirdest thing to put in your Halloween trick-or-treat bag this year.
Ooh, what would that be?
Peeps now come in caramel, what is it called? Candy corn, that's it.
Candy corn flavored
oh, peeps. So shaped like little chicks,
but I love it. That sounds great.
Flavored.
Perfect.
And they also come in caramel apple flavors. I discovered this on a trip to a local big box retailer recently. I took a picture and texted it to a friend who's a Peeps connoisseur.
Oh, my.
So if you're looking for something different to put in all those trick-or-treaters' little bags and pumpkins, caramel corn Peeps.
There we go.
We have some treats for you on our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
Boo. Sorry.
Oh. Well, you know, I mean, it seems like every arts organization is doing some sort of Halloween event this year. I mean, of course, there's always the Haunted House at Children's Museum and Zoo Boo at the zoo.
Storytelling Arts is this Saturday night.
At Crown Hill Cemetery, right? Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra is doing a Haunted Hilbert. Yes, that's going to be on the 30th. It's a Halloween masquerade party. And there will be music, there will be costumes, there will be lots of food from lots of different local places and beverages as well. And the masquerade party concludes with a dance party on the theater's main stage and a donut bar sponsored by Rocket 88 Donuts. So masquerade chic is the attire. Guests must be 21 and over. And you can get more information at the ISO.
I'm seeing everyone rushing to their favorite search engine and punching in a masquerade chic. What does look like?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I'm sure there's going to be some great photos out there on social media on October 30th. Hey, a little sooner than that and not scary at all, this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., a Monument Circle Art Fair, 70 artists, food trucks, 6 musical acts on the South Platform, including Kathy Morris, the great local electric violinist, who's going to play at 3. Again, the art fair is from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and the art fair is free. Put a little spending money in your pocket for those food trucks, but go down and enjoy one of the few last outdoor events of the season.
Very nice. Let's hope for good weather. Mm-hmm. Hey, on Sunday, more Halloween hijinks. Ooh. The Philharmonic Orchestra of Indianapolis's Halloween Hijinks Concert, Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Pike Performing Arts Center, with gargoyles and trolls and the phoenix and wizards and dancing witches and all sorts of other great stuff. There's going to be a lot of Halloween-themed music, including highlights from Harry Potter and Dance Macabre and lots of other good stuff. Again, 3 o'clock at Pike with the Philharmonic Orchestra.
Well, you mentioned the Haunted Hilbert on the 30th, but if you're in the mood for something a little more serious with the ISO, you might go this Friday night at 8 or this Saturday night at 7 to hear one of Beethoven's last works, the great Missa Solemnis. Hans Graf is guesting on the podium, and if you've never heard that work performed live, you're in for an absolute treat. So that is also at Hilbert Circle Theater. Don't dress in a costume for that one, though.
Very nice. Hey, interesting fundraiser is going to be happening out in Carmel. It's the 5th Annual Interactive Intelligence Foundation Dinner Auction Gala, which raises money for organizations that help at-risk kids. And Jeff Saturday is going to be speaking at it. That's right, the Colts, Jeff Saturday. Mm. It's called The Boots and Bourbon. It's exactly what you think it is, with a mechanical bull and bourbon tasting and all sorts of fun stuff. October 17th at the Lucas Oil Estate. And you can get more information if you search for Interactive Intelligence Foundation for Boots and Bourbon. There's also going to be some great music by the local modern country band Airstream Betty.
Well, the artist Emma Overman does really whimsical work, and
sometimes a little spooky.
Sometimes a little spooky, but not. I don't think she's going to cause nightmares in your head if you go to her art show this Friday night at 3 Mass Gallery, which is at 333 Massachusetts Avenue. And she's got just lovely, whimsical artwork. And her four-year-old daughter, Annabelle, is her muse. So if you're detecting some childlike inspiration, that's why.
Very cool. That sounds great. Hey, if you're looking for some ideas for Halloween and you're in that DIY spirit, then you should check out Modern Homespun on Mass Ave. They are having lots of different workshops and events taking place at Homespun throughout the month, including a knit and sip workshop on the 23rd, and they're part of the Mass Ave Monster Mash on the 30th, and they're doing a Homespun Halloween on the 30th in the evening. Lots of cool stuff down there at Homespun.
147 entertaining movies that do more than just entertain. Over 10 days of red carpet premieres and events, parties, and hundreds of film screenings will invade Indianapolis as part of the Heartland Film Festival coming up October 16th through the 25th. You can learn much more online about the Heartland Film Festival. Be there or regret it.
There you go. And the last thing I got, I'm just very excited about on Friday night, Michelle DiNicola, who is my wife.
I know her.
She's going to have her first solo show of her photographs here in Indianapolis. She's originally from Baltimore, and it's going to be at Indie Reads Books, and where they have a party.
An excellent place for it.
It's a great place for her to be. Great digitally manipulated photographs, 12 of them, large scale on white aluminum, and the party's from 7 till 9. Please join us Friday night.
You aren't the subject of any of them.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Nature photos, maybe?
Yes, pretty
cool.
Much so.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, don't forget, you can learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide, and you can find out more scary and not so scary events on our calendar that we call
What'll We Boo?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
This Saturday, Storytelling Arts of Indiana celebrates its annual Ghost Stories at Crown Hill Cemetery with food trucks and scary stories. But as much as Sharon Gamble likes ghost stories, she was equally intrigued when Storytelling Arts announced that its newest recipient of the Frank and Katrina Basile Emerging Stories Fellowship is 88 years old. She invited this gent, Bob Zelkin, and Storytelling Arts Executive Director Ellen Munns to tell us the story.
So, Bob, you have a short story you'd like to start us off with.
Well, I'm preparing for a lecture at the Indiana Historical Center, and the theme is the immigration from Tsarist Russia, Poland, to the U.S. And my family in Tsarist Poland lived in two worlds, the Jewish world, very much God-oriented and supportive, and the Tsarist world, which was massively miserable, prosecutory, murderous. Mm. And a Hasidic Rebbe of the 19th century wrote a story song that put these two worlds, I think, together.
Mm.
And this is his song. It is called A Lawsuit Against God. Hmm. And it, let me go right into it. I see Levi Yitzchok, that was his name, striding into the synagogue, moving in front of the ark, opening up the curtain so that he was facing the scrolls of the Torah and telling this story song. Master of the universe, good morning. I, Levi Yitzchok, the son of Sarah from the town of Berdichev, I have come before you with a lawsuit on behalf of your people Israel. What do you have against your people, Israel? And why have you set yourself upon your people, Israel? wherever I turn is command the children of Israel. And wherever I walk is speak to the children of Israel. And wherever I stand is say to the children of Israel, Tatan, you dear father, how many other nations there are in the world? In ancient days, the Babylonians, the Edomites, the Persians, and in our day, the English, what do they say? Our king is the true ruler. And the Germans, what do they say? Unser Führer, he is the true ruler. And the Russians, what do they say? The Tsar, he is the true ruler. And I, Levi Yitzchok, the son of Sarah from the town of Berdichev, I say, Yiskadal v'yiskadash shemei rabob, magnified and sanctified be God's great name. And I, Levi Yitzchok, the son of Sarah from the town of Berdichev, declared, I will not move from this spot. There must be an end to this terror. It must stop. O Yisgadal, the Yisgadash, Shemei Rabo, magnified and sanctified be God's great name.
Wow. So I have the feeling you were a storyteller before you knew the word story and teller could be in the same sentence.
Well, I'm Jewish, and Jews and stories go together, though I never formally considered storytelling as a professional art until a few years ago. I joined As I Recall, which is a program sponsored by Storytelling Arts, for which I'm grateful. There are so many giveaways in Storytelling Arts. I think the entire organization, except for Ellen, are volunteers, and Ellen is the linchpin. And in that group, I began practicing what worked for me, what didn't work for me, what niche I wanted to move into.
How does your history as a cantor help you as a storyteller?
Yes. Yeah. Because we're always telling stories.
Sure.
In fact, there's a one book of Jewish stories is titled God Loves Stories.
And why not?
And why not? And I think the reason is because facts are interesting and they go to the head, but stories are true and they go to the heart.
That's a fine distinction. Mm. Now, have you ever been putting a story together and had to stop and say, is this true or not?
Well, it depends what you mean by true.
Mm-hmm. Is this emotionally true or not?
Yeah, that I think is the factor. Is it emotionally true?
Where do you start when you want to put a new story together? Where do they come from?
Well, the one I'm preparing right now comes from my history and my family history and stories that my mother and relatives have told me.
Ellen, what is it like to be working with Bob through the Emerging Storytellers program?
Well, I don't actually work with him too much on that program. He applied. You know, it's a grant process, and mm-hmm. he applied, and I have a committee that goes through and actually selects the winner. I think Bob is the 21st recipient.
Wow.
Of the Emerging Stories Fellowship. And then I notify Bob, but Bob works on the story in the As I Recall, and he's also working with a coach.
Mm-hmm.
So we just have met a couple of times to talk about the marketing and his needs. But I won't see this. I won't see and hear the story until the night of the premiere.
And I hope you will love it.
I'm sure I will. I'm sure I will.
No big surprises, huh?
Yeah.
So I read. Tell me if this is true that you've done a number of interesting things. You've had several careers in your life.
At least.
What did you think you were going to be when you went to school?
I thought I was going to be an actuary.
Really?
An insurance mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, in graduate school, I completed the first of the three credentialing exams. And then I found out that while at that time, it is no longer true, but at that time, insurance companies, while they were delighted to hire Jews as agents to sell policies mm-hmm. and collect premiums, but the executive floor was strictly closed against Jews. And so America gave me the opportunity. I made a short right turn and ended up as a researcher in a top-secret position in the office of the Secretary of Defense in the Pentagon, where, to my great delight, I would occasionally get letters addressed to General Zalkin. The theory being, if you were in that office, must be a general. And it particularly tickled me because when I was in the Army, the highest rank I achieved was a lowly corporal.
But in the popular mind, you were a general. I love that. And then, so you did that for a while, but somewhere later on?
Yeah, and then America offered me the opportunity. I'm a first-generation American.
Yeah.
And I made a sharp left turn and quit my job, entered the Jewish Theological Seminary, served 5 years at a congregation in Skokie, Illinois, 28 happy years at Congregation Bethel Tzedek here in Indianapolis, and since then have spent 26 and counting very happy years in retirement.
I read that you were clergy on ships for a while. Is that true?
Yes. I've been doing that for 25 years. In fact, I leave tomorrow morning for my next assignment.
So how does that? These are cruise ships. These are passenger ships.
I conduct services on board for those of the Jewish faith who wish to attend.
How fascinating! So somewhere out there, there's a network of contacts, so you can find out where your services might be needed next.
Yes, there are agents who handle this.
And where's the trip you're going tomorrow? Where are you going?
Oh, it's just to Hawaii.
Oh, just to Hawaii. Oh, Ellen, have you ever been to Hawaii?
No, I
haven't.
Can
we stow away with you?
Yeah,
I haven't either.
I wish.
Last year I was in Antarctica. Now that was something.
Yeah, I think you might be the only person to tell Jewish stories in Antarctica. Wasn't that something you discovered?
I don't think the field is too crowded.
So tell us, so when you're doing these travels, you have to be, I assume, that most storytellers are not only great speakers but great listeners, because aren't you collecting material every place you go?
Yes.
Do you ever tip people into the fact that you're listening because you might want to gather their experiences later?
Of course not.
What's the hardest thing about storytelling?
The hardest thing about storytelling is making sure my particular niche, and the title of my generic program, mm-hmm. is stories and songs that touch the heart. Mm-hmm. And I'm always looking not just for cute stories, but for that kind of truth that is beyond fact.
Sharon Gamble with 88-year-old Bob Zalkin, recipient of the Frank and Katrina Basile Emergent Stories Fellowship, and Ellen Munn, Storytelling Arts Executive Director. You can hear Bob's story, The Golden Land, on Saturday, November 7th at the Eugene Maryland Glick Indiana History Center. But if Bob's stories got you in the mood to hear storytellers even sooner, then check out the organization's Ghost Stories at Crown Hill Cemetery with food trucks and scary stories, plus the optional RIP reception with adult beverages. That's all Saturday night. You can learn the whole story at storytellingarts.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll get a preview of this year's Ann Katz Festival of Books and Art.
I'll chat with Brent Marty about his Miss Gulch Returns at Theater on the Square.
Speaking of music, I'll meet the ISO's new associate conductor, and we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.